They want to grow better crops. They want to learn to read and write. Why? Because they know they can be better farmers, better villagers. And the radio station deals with very interesting little tips, which I think are very spiritual. I'm always fond of this one story that deals with how to load a pig onto a cart. Has anybody here ever tried to put a pig onto a cart? It can take you most of the day putting a good-sized pig on a cart. And I can imagine many Quechua Indians in Ecuador had spent hours and hours and hours in frustration, not successfully putting the pig on the cart. The radio station had the answer. Put a bag over its head, and it becomes completely docile. You just lead them onto the cart. And so when they heard this, this was magic. This was really magic. That is a truly spiritual message that saves you much time, that gives you a better life, saves you a lot of hassle, and allows that kind of success, a small success. The radio station then began picking up all kinds of tips from all over the world, Africa, Asia, and began pouring them. As a result, that population is more enlightened, it's happier, feels prouder, and their consciousness of themselves is raised. $30,000 going into a radio station isn't going to build any huge dams or highways or factories, but little by little, the people are improved, are better, because they control, to a large extent, what goes on the radio station. What happens on the other 15% of the time? The other 15% of the time are the announcements from the Department of Agriculture, from the Department of Health, along with some Baha'i music and some Baha'i prayers. All Baha'i feasts are held over the radio. It's a very nice custom. I was to one village. We got there at 7 o'clock because we knew that the radio station was going to broadcast the feast at 8:30, at 8 o'clock. So we all stood around in the village, and then we were welcomed graciously by the headman. And then at 8 o'clock, they have their one old battered radio station, radio, and they turn it on, and they have this voice coming in two languages, Quechua and Spanish, and saying, "This is the Feast of Words." There's some prayers, there's some music, there's announcements in both language, and the people listen so attentively. That's just rich, rich food for them. Then there's an announcement from the Universal House of Justice, a message from the counselor, something from the NSA, and that's at the end of half hour it goes off, and then the consultation begins. Well, the third world is showing us how to use the radio. What do we use our radio stations here for in North America? Well, fortunately, there's a pilot project here in the United States, which Canada is watching very closely. Now, this kind of work, which takes very little money, which we have little of, but lots of manpower, which we have lots of, are the two criteria that justify or indicate to us whether or not we should proceed with a development project. First of all, do the people want it? Not whether I think it's a good idea, but do the people want it? And you have an awfully hard time guessing what the people want. There's a story about a CUSO volunteer. CUSO is like your Peace Corps. Young people go abroad to Africa, all over the world. This one went to Africa. But he was very smart. He knew that you had to wait to find out what the people wanted before you helped them as a development worker in social and economic development. So he did nothing for a year except get to know people, get to know the language, a little bit of the culture, and so on. But he knew, he could see that what they needed desperately was a way of bringing fresh water into the village, because the women had to walk about 5 miles to a slough to get the water, and the water was polluted. But that there was a stream up on a hill which could be brought down on a bamboo-type conduit. So he talked to them about that. And they said, "That's a great idea. That's a great idea." He said, "Well, I want to help you. My job here is I'm a development worker. I'm paid by a foreign government. I can help you." I said, "That's very good, but what we really want is a football field. We want to play soccer with the neighboring villages." So he swallowed his professional pride and said, "I'll help you build a football field." And he got bulldozers in and they cleared the field. They were delighted. They had fielded their team and the people got better and they were able to think of playing the neighboring village. So then he went back to the head council. This is a true story. They went back to the head council people and said, "Now, we're working together, we've got a lot of unity going here, let's see if we can get that water down to bring better health and prosperity to the children and the villagers. They said, yes, but there is one thing we need. We need a better road so we can get to the next village, so we can play soccer more frequently with this next village. So again, he said, fine, I'll help you. He was getting a little impatient by this time because his contract was running out. And he helped them again. He was very instrumental in getting the bulldozers and the workers and so on. They all contributed. L Village contributed. And it was built. And then they played the next village and they were having a happy time. And then he announced to them that he had to leave. He had to go back to Canada. They were very unhappy because, after all, he'd been instrumental in bringing them a football field and a road. So he said, I'm coming back for my next visit in about a month and I'll say goodbye to you all. And they said, that's very sad. But they were glad to see him when he did come. And they had a big surprise for him when he came, and you can guess what it was. They had built the well. They had built the conduit from the mountain into the village. And they said, you wanted this so badly that we built this for you. And he was quite sure that the day he left, they would never use it again. How do you know, really, what the needs are? It requires a great deal of sensitivity. It requires a great deal of going along with the group. Radio Baha'i did that. It listened to the people and let them listen to themselves and provides that kind of exchange of opinion, out of which comes a spiritual awareness, out of which comes a growth, a pride. The other thing that I could describe to you in terms of Baha'i development activities is what was mentioned earlier, tutorial schools. A tutorial school is a very simple concept. It means that somebody with more education in that village goes to another village and performs as a teacher, maybe telling them a little bit about agriculture, about health, maybe helps them to read and write. He gets very little pay. Quite often he gets none, but he may get a place to stay and some food to eat. But this is a service offered by the Baha'is as a community services in parts of Africa, in Chile, South America, and all throughout India. Now, we would not call them schools, because in many cases there's no building, they're under a tree. But the people are hungry for education. The state government can't provide it, there's no money. People don't want to go to the villages, they all want to go to the big cities. The Baha'is are now reversing that trend. And the Baha'i people of that community, of that culture, of that language, go back. Now, what we're trying to do in Canada is find ways in which these people can get further training, can be recognized, so they can do more effective work when they go to the villages. And we feel that this is responding directly to what those people want for their children. People in African villages will sacrifice anything for their children's education. It's the most important thing. Not their health, not their water supply, not fertilizer for their crops, but we want our children educated, because they know that's the hope of the future. Looking at those two brief examples, let me extract some of the elements that need to be present, I think, before we should be, as Baha'is, involved in development activities. And I think this holds true for any agency doing development work. Obviously, it has to be grassroots. It has to spring from the need of the people. And that's much easier said than done, and it's much harder to perceive, as the experience in Africa indicated with our CUSO volunteer. It needs to be indigenous. Secondly, the people need to be involved as participants in the program. You don't do it to them, you do it with them. It's so easy to recognize what a depressed or oppressed people need and give it to them. But it's like depriving your child of his own growth experience by doing everything for him. It weakens him in the final analysis. He has to struggle. He has to learn. But you can be there as an aid and a support. But he has to go through that experience. So participation has to be built into the project. Now, as I go down this list, you'll find out, perhaps, what has puzzled many development experts, the reason that many development projects, most development projects in social and economic fields, have failed is because hardly any of these criteria have been met. How many do you know of USAID projects or CETA projects in Canada that have sprung from indigenous yearning, that have built in participation? And the key and central thing in Baha'i participation is the participation equally of men and women. Women are the most underutilized resource in the third world, and maybe in our own world. They need to be involved in the building and maintaining of these development activities. Their experience and their wisdom and their energy has to be tapped. The other thing that we must require is low cost or labor intensive. Does it use a lot of people? If it uses a lot of people, then the responsibility is spread and it becomes their project and not my project. Even if it were the same project, there's a much greater difference if I did it for them with a group of experts and then pull out, rather than train them, educate them to take it on their own. The fourth thing is that it needs to be related culturally. Does it fit in with their life's plan, their lifestyle? Try and work with Indian people in northern Alberta. You have to adjust to the way they see time. Or in the States, I'm sure it's the same. How do they see the world around them? What is the pattern and rhythm of their lives? So the cultural aspect needs to be respected, not tolerated, but respected, and used and employed for the way in which they want to have these things done. The other thing that has to be built into the project is access to knowledge and information. There's great power in knowledge and information. I was delighted but saddened when I went to a village in India and saw how excited people were about the fact that they had learned to grow chickens in the last 2 years and were now wealthy. I said, why didn't you grow them before? We didn't know there were such things. A Baha'i village worker went there and showed them how to build a small shelter and introduce some chickens. This village had lived that same way for hundreds and hundreds of years. I went to the village and I asked the people how many had been to Gwalior, which was 30 miles away. Two people had been to Gwalior. How many think they'll go to Gwalior? You know, about two more hands went up. How many children would like to go to Gwalior? No, they didn't really want to know. Where will you spend the rest of your life? Right here. Well, maybe that's not a bad idea. But the world is much larger. The opportunities for them and for their growth are much greater. The fact that the simple technology of growing chickens was introduced meant that that village now had surplus money. They never had surplus disposable money, which meant that they had scholarships for their children. They traveled to market. They sold their chickens in Gwalior and came back with money, and they shared it cooperatively. This was a Baha'i, pretty well, totally Baha'i village. A very simple thing. Other villages began looking at it, which were not made up of Baha'is, and we want that too. So those ideas have gone all over this area of that particular state. Simple technology, access to knowledge, which they never had. They'd been kept away from it, or it had been kept away from them. There must be local control and local benefit. That's awfully hard to do. Our federal governments find it hard to do for the states and the provinces. The states and provinces find it hard to do for the municipalities. We find it hard to do with our kids, to give them local control and autonomy of some parts of their lives. And yet it's a part of their growth. The other thing which is very dear to Baha'is is the process by which decisions get made. Not by somebody telling somebody, but by a process, a mysterious process or art of consultation. The consultation which takes place in that community, in that Indian village, wherever the project is concerned, means that everybody gets a chance to create something which is much greater than the sum of the parts, and they feel involved. Like the people in Radio Baha'i, they feel respected. They can send a message. My cow has been lost. It looks like this. 2 days later, somebody reports the cow 30 miles away, and he gets his cow. That's the kind of exchange, interaction, consultation which is taking place electronically, which must take place in the project itself. The other thing that you must see, that we must see in a plan before we would become fully involved in it as Baha'is, is it needs to be integrated. It has to deal with all aspects of that community's growth, the agricultural, the technical, the women, the men, the children, and it mustn't separate that community. All parts of the community must grow as a result of that introduced idea. Finally, and most important, is that the goal is the spiritual enrichment of the people. How do you measure spiritual enrichment? We can measure your paycheck. Do you have more money than you had before? Yes, it's easy to see. Do you have less money? How do you measure whether or not that project, that activity, that venture in social and economic development is making you a richer person spiritually? Is there more harmony in your life? Is there more justice in your community? Is there more unity amongst the people? In the Indian villages, for example, there are usually three or four distinct religious groups. The Hindus, the Muslims, sometimes Parsi, sometimes Jain, and then the untouchables. How does this come about? How do you bring about unity in that group so they begin working together? Does the Green Revolution, which was introduced to India, add to unity or detract from unity? Well, what's the answer? Who benefited most from the Green Revolution? The wealthy landowners, because they were the only ones who could afford to use and spread the fertilizer and other improvements. It was not sufficiently geared to deliver benefit to the villager. And if there is a theme or a keynote in Baha'i development at this stage of our development, it's whether or not there is a payoff, a direct benefit for the villager. Many development projects never get down to the village level, where the heart of the village is. Fly over the country someday, any country, and see how much land there is and how many people still live there. Most of the people in the third world still live there. And agriculture is still our basic activity as a human race. Those are some of the elements that need to be present before a Baha'i project will be identified as such, where we will become involved in an activity. We feel that there is nothing we can contribute in terms of mass wealth or high technology itself, but our job is to help set loose the individuals, the human beings, that potential which is most underutilized in the world today, and that's the human potential. And this can be done, I think, by keeping in mind another statement of Abdu'l-Bahá's. Some Baha'is have developed it into a formula. It's a very useful formula for living your life. We in North America like formulas, plans, and programs. Abdu'l-Bahá said that the successful completion of any project must have three stages: knowledge, volition, and action. This is old hat to a lot of Baha'is. But apply this to the third world. We thought, after the Marshall Plan in Europe, it worked very well, but because our cultures were so different, they were so much the same. The introduction of knowledge, information, education itself has never been enough to change or to motivate people. We know we shouldn't eat certain foods, they make us fat. That's good, solid knowledge. What do we do about it? We know that smoking is bad. It sometimes takes more than knowledge to get us to stop smoking. The simple fact that you know something is no guarantee that your behavior is going to change. If that's true of an individual, how much more true it is of a society. So knowledge is important. The peasants, the villagers in Ecuador must have access to the knowledge. But that knowledge coming over the radio station in itself is not enough. It can be up-to-date, perfectly true gospel. The next stage is volition. They have to make it their own. And how do the villagers in Ecuador make it their own? They sit around and talk about it. So the parts they didn't understand, they check out with somebody else. It gets into their own being. They begin to identify it with their own mythology, with their own beliefs, with their own practices. And they have to see it as not imposed, but something which can be adjusted and adapted to their life before they can do something with it. So the knowledge then becomes internalized. And that's the motivating. That's the wellsprings that we speak of in the Baha'i writings. Those wellsprings are touched when they begin to see this as something which is meaningful for them at this time. Whether it's a health innovation, whether it's something to do with education, whether it's agricultural, whether it's something for the improvement of children or whatever. The volition period is the part that we often overlook because it takes time. People have to talk, discuss, argue, disagree. But eventually, if it's true for them, they will recognize it. Not because I say it's true, but because they see it as something which they can incorporate in their development plan. And sometimes we leave it there. Still isn't good enough. This is new. This is a new venture for a lot of these villages. So we have to guide them as best we can to action. Once it has been applied, once you have practiced something, once you have put it into actual practice, then it becomes yours, because you completed the circuit, The knowledge has been given to you. You like it. It's mine. It isn't something which I have matched. It's something which I have made.